All right, welcome everyone to the Water Resources and Watershed Committee meeting. Before we start, I have some announcements to read. This meeting is being conducted in person at the Engineering Services Section Boardroom. As a convenience to the public, members of the public may also participate virtually by logging into agency's Zoom meetings. Any member of the public may listen to the meeting or make comments to the committee using the call-in number or Zoom webinar link. In the event there is a disruption of service which prevents the agency from broadcasting the meeting to members of the public using either the call-in option or internet-based service, this meeting will not be postponed or rescheduled, but will continue without remote participation. The remote participation option is being provided as a convenience to the public and is not required. Members of the public are welcome to attend the meeting in person. Participate in public comment from your computer, tablet, or smartphone. When announced the agenda item you wish to speak on, click the raised hand feature in Zoom. You will be notified once you're done to speak. Please unmute when requested. To participate in public comment via phone, when I announce the agenda item you wish to speak on, dial *9 to raise your hand. Phone participants will be called on by the last two digits of their phone number or by name. When it's your turn to speak, dial *6 to unmute. I'd like to remind the public that's present today that there are comment cards outside. Please complete or return those to the admin to help expedite public comment section. The procedure for tonight's meeting are as follows. I will introduce each agenda item. Staff will present. I'll ask for public comments. I will then ask for discussion and questions from committee members. Any PowerPoints shown at tonight's meeting will be posted to the SCV Water website. At this time, all committee members are present except for Director Bill Cooper. And we will start with item one, Pledge of Allegiance. Please stand, place the flag, place your right over your heart, and repeat with me.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. You may be seated. All right, move on to item number two, public comments. Are there any comments from the public attending in person?
I have one under three,
Thank you, Ms. Noltmeyer. Any one virtual?
There's not online.
All right, we move to item number three, recommend adoption of a resolution approving the SB 221 water supply verification for the Sand Canyon Village development. And this item will be presented by Rick Vassilopoulos. Mr. Vassilopoulos. Please go ahead.
So, Uni, it is not giving me the option to share my screen.
Okay.
Any clue? I don't know why it's not. I don't see.
It's probably over.
Okay. All right. I found it. Hold on. You guys keep switching from Zoom to everything else. Okay. Can we see that?
Yeah, you're good to go.
Okay, perfect. Thank you. Sorry about that. Good evening, committee members. I'm Rick Vassilopoulos, Water Resources Planner. I'm here tonight to discuss the water supply verification preparation for the Sand Canyon Village project. First, just a quick presentation outline. I'll first discuss what the SB 221 water supply verification is, then move to the project's description and its water demands. I'll talk a little bit about our approach in projecting future water supplies, and then some supply and demand comparisons, and finally, our conclusions and recommendations. So the SB 221 water supply verification refers to the legislative requirement aimed at ensuring sustainable water management. It mandates local agencies to verify sufficient water supplies before approving new developments. Water supply verifications are triggered by an approval of a development agreement or tentative map that includes a subdivision or residential development exceeding 500 units. Verification approvals may not be granted unless a sufficient water supply will be available to serve the project over a 20-year planning projection, including normal single dry and multiple dry years, based on a water supply verification supported by substantial evidence including but not limited to our urban water management plan and the water supply assessment. A key difference between water supply assessments and water supply verifications is that the plans and estimates developed under the water supply assessment statute must be replaced with firm assurances of supply, although these supplies can include future planned supplies. Also, water supply verifications are not part of CEQA. Their sufficiency is subject to direct legal challenge. So the Sand Canyon development is located at the northeast corner of Soledad Canyon Road and Sand Canyon Road in Canyon Country. The development is a planned residential community developed on approximately 89 acres and is within SCB Water Service Area. The project consists of 119 single-family homes, 461 multifamily attached homes, 140-unit assisted living facility, 45,000 square feet of commercial space, a two-acre park, and 18 acres of dedicated irrigation. The project is scheduled to have the commercial space completed by 2025, mid part of 2025, with the occupancy in the residential areas to start in mid 2025 and finish in mid 2027. The projected water demands of the project were calculated using the same methods we used to calculate future demands in our 2020 urban water management plan. The project's demands in a normal year are projected to be 289 acre feet per year, and the demands with the demands increasing to 306 acre feet per year in a single dry year and to 295 acre feet per year in multiple dry years. These totals reflect an additional demand of 25.6% above the model water efficiency landscape ordinance and a 3.77 climate change factor. Due to changes in the project's features, these demands are approximately 100 acre feet per year less than the demands from the 2016 water supply assessment that was done and what was included in the 2020 urban plan. So staff's approach in preparing the water supply verification included updating our supply projections using the most recent information that we have. The verification is based on both current and planned water supplies from the 2020 urban plan, but current conditions are taken into consideration by utilizing DWR's 2021 final capability report and modifications to the recovery schedules of wells impacted by perchlorate and VOCs. The modified schedule also includes PFAS treatment for all wells which do not meet the newly proposed U.S. EPA maximum contaminant levels. So the State Water Project Table A reliability percentages used in the 2020 urban plan were updated with the final 2021 delivery capability report in our supply projections for this water supply verification. This update shows a decrease in both the single dry year and normal year reliability percentages, where the multiple dry year reliability stayed virtually the same as it was used in the latest urban plan. Staff also conferred with operations and engineering departments to adjust the scheduling of treatments for both our Saugus and alluvial groundwater wells. Kennedy Jenks is also currently in the process of amending our groundwater treatment implementation plan to include these changes. The Saugus wells shown here are impacted by perchlorate and VOCs, as well as PFAS contamination. Four of these wells are scheduled to be back online by 2025, with the other five starting up by 2028. And then as of now, we show no, during initial tests out at Saugus 3 and 4, showed no PFAS contamination. So we're not anticipating any treatment will be necessary at those wells, or at least 3 and 4. And then this table shows the alluvial wells that are impacted mainly by PFAS when they are scheduled to come back online. Overall, an additional 9 wells may be impacted by the new US EPA's proposed MCL for PFAS compared to the 2021 groundwater treatment implementation plan that was done. In total, 34 wells may need treatment for either PFAS, perchlorate, or VOCs. But all of these wells are currently scheduled to be back up and running before 2029. So comparison of SDV Water's projected supplies to our demand is shown in the summary table. The table shows that our water supply is sufficient to meet demands for all year types through the required period of time for this verification. Supplies at the table include all of our existing and planned supplies listed in the 2020 urban plan, but updated with our most recent information. These supplies are consistent with what the code for the water supply verifications allow. The water demands shown in the table are the same as in the 2020 urban plan, and the water demands for the Sand Canyon Village development were included in these projections. So using these projections, we find that the water supply is sufficient to meet projected demands in normal, multi-dry, and single dry years throughout the study period. So in conclusion, the long-term water demands in the 2020 urban plan included all demands for this project. Staff compared these demands against updated urban water management plan water supplies. And staff has concluded that the total projected water supplies over the 20-year period will be sufficient to meet the projected demands associated with the proposed Sand Canyon Village development, as well as existing and planned future uses. That being said, staff would recommend that the Water Resources and Watershed Committee recommend that the Board of Directors of the Santa Clarita Valley Water Agency adopt a resolution approving the SB 221 water supply verification for the Sand Canyon Village development and direct staff to submit the water supply, verification to the city of Santa Clarita. And I can hopefully answer some questions. I've got some people here in case we have to tag team your questions, but fire away.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Vassilopoulos. Before we open this up to committee discussions, are there any members of the public with questions virtually?
There's not a one.
Ms. Noltmeyer, do you have a comment on item number 3?
Yes, I have a lot of questions about
what's
being proposed. It's just an end run for a very large project. And unless you're willing to start approving that everywhere along the line, you should not approve this. This is not a project that is, of that importance to the community. It's a big project, but I've seen this done too often. And they just come around and say, well, it's really not anything. Anything of that size, of course it is. And if you start approving that, you better start approving every little one that comes in once they're a housing of 100 or whatever, that you have to approve it. I'm very much against this. If it gets you out there now, there'll be no let up on this. Because I've read this, and this doesn't seem to be putting out any real reason for this or why they are entitled to it. And I know if I had had more time, I could have brought you more issues with regard to what they're doing. But I've been very busy on some other issues. But this one is, it's just somebody trying to say you have to approve this because I have approval for it, but I don't have the water. You're the water. You decide. If you approve it for this large of a project, you're not going to be able to deny it to any lesser projects because they will have the perfect example to use each time it comes up. They will say, well, you approved it for this huge, huge, huge development. You can approve it for my 10 here, 20 there, 30 here, 40 there. It's a matter of being firm on what you think should be done. And this will establish that, is what I'm pointing out to you. It will establish, well, this is a huge project. It really is. And you approved that just because they said they had the city approve. Well, you can go in there and get the city approval on a lot of things. And that's where you have to stand up, that you're a water company, or you're just someone that finds a way to approve whatever is putting the pressure on you. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Kaltmeyer. So just a reminder, we're not a land use agency. We are mandated to do water supply assessments and water supply verifications as a water agency. Okay. Many comments, questions?
I'll respond to Ms. Kaltmeyer.
Please go ahead, President.
This has come up many times before, Ms. Kaltmeyer, and you know that very well. SCD Water is not a planning authority. The planning authority in this regard is the City of Santa Clarita. What our agency is doing is responding to the requirements of SB 221, provide a water supply verification. And tell me if I'm wrong. If we have water, we are not at, we just can't deny that we have water when we have water. Is that correct?
Yes.
So if you want to stop projects, land development projects in Santa Clarita, water should not be used as a weapon. It should be going back to the Planning Commission and the City of Santa Clarita and speak to those agencies. And if you want to stop a project, we don't use water as a weapon here. We use water to serve our community. And that's right. So I think your comments were out of bounds.
Well said. Thank you, President Martin. All right. Committee, any questions, comments on the verification presented by Mr. Vassilopoulos?
I have quite a few comments on the topic. I don't know if either of you wanted to go.
No, we can go one by one.
Okay. Overall, nice job on the verification. I do have several comments. And this first one is more general or global. There are several ways to look at the adequacy of the support for this project. The approach that the report did was to take this project's demand and all future projects' demand. It utilizes the Urban Water Management Plan to make a conclusion that the supply is sufficient. Another approach that might be valid in the kind of question from the lawyers is it appropriate to do maybe a parallel or alternative analysis of taking the water demand for this project and other projects that are going to be developed through 2027 and compare that to today's water supply that we have along with those supplies that we'll have up to that point in time. And so, certainly up to this point in time, we're good and we can approve this. Water supplies at that time. So that may be a question more for the lawyers as to whether or not that is a valid approach. But it might be an approach that we might want to supplement this report with, and that it kind of shows two paths or two justifications for reaching the conclusion that there's an adequate water supply for this project. should some future water supply, like future wells at Rosedale, be challenged as not being sufficiently likely to take place or something, then I don't anticipate being an answer to that question right now unless the lawyers are on the line and have thought about it, but I'd like to hear back regarding that approach.
Well, Director Marks, I have asked Sarah Foley from BBK, who was tremendous in helping us prepare this document. She may have an answer to your question, possibly?
I can speak to it. Good evening, everyone. I think that under SB 221, this kind of additional planning is not necessarily required for SCV Water to comply with its statutory requirement. However, from an internal planning perspective, it might make sense. I think I'd like to see this proposal developed a little bit more and considered. But again, I don't think it's necessarily a requirement for this particular water supply verification. The agency is required to approve, to adopt a water supply verification that either says there's enough water or says there's not enough water, statutorily required to do so. But I certainly don't see any downside to doing additional analysis beyond what's required under the statute, just for the agency's own internal planning processes. And it would probably facilitate future water supply assessments and written verifications of supply.
Just to piggyback on Dr. Mark's question. So according to SB 221, the standard format is we evaluate whether total water supplies available to SCV Water during normal, single dry, and multiple dry years over 20-year projection. That's the verbiage that's in SB 221. Is that right?
Yes, that's correct.
Okay. So we have to meet the requirements of SB 221. Anything further can be added on, as Director Marks suggested.
Yes. But if council is comfortable with that this verification meets requirements of 221,
okay,
I think we ought to proceed with it. I was I think I was wondering if it would make the document more robust if we carried out that alternative analysis and came to a conclusion. I'm sure you'd come to the same conclusion, but from slightly different approaches.
Okay. Quick question for legal. If we do decide to do that, will that open up us for any liabilities or risk?
Potentially, because the water supply or the written supply verification is a separate legal animal. It's independent from the CEQA process. So unlike the water supply assessment, which can only be challenged as part of a CEQA challenge, the water supply verification can be challenged independently, and that includes failure to provide one in a manner, in a timely manner, as required under the statute. But again, that would be, up to the city or the developer to file that sort of action. I don't think I've ever seen one. And to the contrary, if you're doing additional work that bolsters the analysis, that bolsters the substantial evidence of the written supply verification, that would certainly, help fend off a legal challenge to a water supply verification.
Yeah. That's what I was thinking, that that type of analysis. Interesting too. I'd like to have to think about that and utilize their judgment when they finalize the document as to whether or not they want to include that in what they recommend to the board.
Understood.
Couple of other comments. We go over the development of the requirements in section 1.2, where lays out all the requirements of the statute. I was wondering if it might make the document a little bit more accessible to the board members if there were included somewhere a summary table that takes the requirements that staff has listed here and points to, you know, various sections in the document that support an analysis. I don't think that would be requirement by statute, but might be something that might make it more accessible to the board. Let's see. So one area can be a little bit global. There's this requirement about copies of capital outlay programs for delivering financing. We don't go into a great deal, a whole lot of detail in this report. I think the report could be made more robust in that area. We've done some great things. Recently, we've adopted a new budget with a new capital outlays in it. We've had an official bond statement, and we sold bonds for financing much of the capital program dealing with the PFAS contamination. Mm-hmm. We've also won a lawsuit regarding VOC contamination. I think mentioning those and incorporating those into this text would make it a more robust document should it be challenged. In section 1.7, paping, editing things if we made it consistently alphabetical, that would help. And you know, some sites, there's still a lot of sites to the draft on the liability department. Relying on the final reports. And also there are some documents. I think they're missing, like the recently adopted recycled water rules and regs. Again, just making the document a little more robust there. The end of it, we talk about it. A contract with the sanitation district. I don't say what the contract's for, I believe it's for the recycled water supply, so clarifying that would be helpful. As well as referring to the most recently adopted budget I think also in section 3.2.2, there's a section on the contract extension. I think that discussion needs to be updated to reflect GWR actually having implemented that contract amendment. There may be some carryover language from the water supply assessment. Point 2.7. We talked about the table A or supply assessment. I think there's a reference here back to the 2019 assessment that needs to be updated. Same thing happens in section 3.2.9.
Which point in 3.2.9 is the updated direct marks?
What was the question, Chair?
Section 3.2.9. Mm-hmm. There's an item that needs to be updated. I'm just wondering which one.
I think it's the reference to the 2019 Delta Command Report. So
okay, I see
the end of the paragraph.
Yeah, just a quick update on that. So the 2020 Urban Plan used that as the reference, and so this document was relying upon the 2020 Urban Plan. But to Dirk's point, Director Mark's point, there has been a subsequent release of a new Delta Conveyance Report, which this water supply verification takes into account. So what I'm hearing is the edit is we need to talk through that in that. The 2020 plan still relied upon the 2019 Delta Conveyance Report, but this document is actually updating and relying upon the 2021 Delta Conveyance Report. So there's several places in the document where it can use
an update.
Yeah, basically bringing it current with that explanation. So it's not really as much of a delete as it is a couple extra sentences bringing it all the way forward to the 2021 plan.
Okay, understood, thank you.
At least that's how I see it.
Yeah.
That sounds true.
Right, back to you, Director Marks.
So the report Table 3.3 of recent historic groundwater production. The statute requires a look at 20-year historic period. So possibly somewhere in the text, a reference back to the SCV water report that goes back those 20 years would be desirable, assuming you don't want to extend the table 3.3 back back for the first 20 years. So, plus 3.4, which is a table that has where we see a lot of discussion at the board. And that table gives both the permitted capacity and the cons permitted and the annual capacity. Along with the bumping that we anticipate for each well, and the criticism has been that somebody might misinterpret this table as us planning to take 83,000 acre feet of water out of the aquifer, which you can read the report and you can read it through this table. Certainly not the case. But if we change the title of this table to something along the lines of comparison of existing and future well capacity to anticipated pumping, that I think should address the concerns that have been voiced in previous or at previous board meetings.
Director March, which table was that again?
It'd be 3-4A.
Oh, okay. I was looking at 3-4 and I'm like, okay, got it.
Yeah, good catch, Director March. I do remember that lengthy discussion during board meeting regarding this table, this type of table and this type of verbiage.
That there are several places where there could be a discussion of the future capital plan, whether it's in the actual resource area like import supplies, aluminum or sockets, or if you want to put some sort of a more general section on capital plans, you know, somewhere in section 3 where you talk about the water supply. Could be done either way. I just feel that there needs to be a beefing up of our financial discussion and our ability to bring proposed facilities online that in support of the future supply that we identify in this section. Moving on to section 4. I need to consider updating the introduction to include the climate change work that was done in support of the 2021 Beautiful. This action just drives risk in our ability to meet those risks. It probably would be good to acknowledge that DWR is undertaking studies and developing guidance on future, or how climate change is incorporated into other future documents, such as the Groundwater Sustainability Plan, as it deals with climate change and groundwater and ecosystems.
Dr. Mott, can you restate your comment? You want that section under section 4, which deals predominantly with water quality and contaminants. Where would you like the section regarding climate change to be embedded? Which section?
Well, probably something in the introductory, but then further on, there is a climate change discussion. Further on, section 4.
Okay.
I think I already made a comment about our successful POC litigation. I don't know if the discussion regarding well 201 and 205, if that should be mentioned there.
Where was that one, Rick Lawrence?
In POCs, well, 201 and 205, I guess that's it, at the end of section. Or 2.1, which talks about the collect. But there's also discussion of POCs.
That's dealing with the heading, so I'm seeing that. Yeah. I'm seeing the challenge there.
Yeah, there's something.
There's a heading of perchlorate, and then it jumps to the well names.
Well named, and it talks about the other things. And then 4.2.8 talks about organic compounds. So maybe that's the more appropriate place to
articulate that.
Articulate the.
Yeah, and I think it is in there, 201. Is in there. 205 is not jumping out at me right now.
Yeah.
Okay. We'll take a look at that. Oh, there's 205. That was true.
Yeah.
That was true.
And then in section 4.8 potential climate change. Is the appropriate place to supplement the discussion with the fact that we do have some even more conservative climate change assumptions in the 2021 ECR that should be reflected here? At the very end of section 4.8, about the assumption that beyond 40 degrees are assuming the same climate change conditions, probably should provide some reasoning as to why we're doing that if the trend is, you know, upwards, that, you know, we don't have the steady shrinking WR yet, or pending those studies, the assumptions that were made by DWR for 44 are pretty hyper-conservative. I mean, they're less than 0.5%. So, as it just stating it is probably not enough for Buckingham to provide some reasoning. And then I had a question. In section 4.9, regarding the indoor and outdoor water use efficiency standards, I believe DWR has adopted the entire one since the state legislature has. Do we know what the status is of the outdoor water use efficiency standards? Have those been adopted? And if they have, we need to update the language in the report.
Yes, Director Marks, the outdoor has not been adopted yet. The indoor has, like recently, like it's not even on their website yet. Mr. Cole had mentioned earlier today, as well as Mr. Dickens, that has passed for the indoor, but the outdoor is still up in the air. But they haven't finalized anything for the outdoor use.
Okay.
Well, Director Mark, just looking for his comment. Just looking back on section 4-25, current standard versus recommended standard. What's the feeling in Sacramento, Mr. Cole? Is the recommended going to be a current standard in the near future? 42 GCPD for indoor use?
Yeah, that has actually, we need to update that. That's been adopted. So that's what I think Director Marks was pointing out. So the Hertzberg bill updated the standards, and DWR is now going through the process of recognizing the new bill. So that is in play. It's not a future thing. It is future in the point of view that it's not a standard that is tomorrow, but it has been adopted at a point in time that we can clarify the document.
Okay. Thank you. Mm-hmm. Back to you, Dr. Marks.
In section 410, we talked about the supplemental water reliability modeling that we've done. If we have done some additional modeling with the new with our new model that is based on the 2021 data, and our analysis is showing that these conclusions are still valid, I think that would be helpful to that section. Then in section 5, table 5.1 goes back 10 years. The statute seems to say 20 years. Do we need to extend this table, or would be referring back to the SCG water report be sufficient? I think that ought to be looked at.
Yeah, and I think we have this discussion, Director Marks, that we will find this information and we'll extend the table back to 20 years.
Okay, thank you. I know I've had a lot of things about the report, but it takes a lot of work to pull it together. I do want to commend staff for their efforts and pulling it. Pulling this together. My comments are not in any way meant to criticize staff, but to help provide them with some guidance that may make the document more robust. With that, seeing my comments.
Now, Dr. Marcelli, you are an asset to the ratepayers in the city water. I'm glad you're on this committee. I'm glad you're on the board. And I think the staff acknowledges that as well. Before we move on to comments from President Martin and myself, any objections from committee directors to move forward with Director Mark's addition, changes, add-ons?
No, I just would like a little clarification on what this is going to do to the next time it comes to the board. The water supply verification is required to approve the tentative MET, correct?
Mm-hmm.
So are we aware of any time sensitivity on this?
We are. I think, and Rick can go into the detail of kind of the dates of when we received the request and the period of time it's taken to respond to it. I think that the challenge that we were faced with is we got this request kind of like a moment after we learned the EPA was going to, move forward with a different approach for the maximum contaminant level for PFAS. So I think, us having that information made us want to make sure that in this document that we provided the most recent, you know, best available information that we had. And we felt there was a need to take a time out and really look at kind of our supply portfolio, especially in regards to groundwater and the return of service of when wells would go offline and when would be a realistic period of time when they could come back online. And so we engaged a consultant to update a report we had done before with the best information we have now. That turned around fairly quickly. I mean, it's only been a couple months to get through that report, get it fully updated, get it incorporated into this document. And so I just say that because I know that the city is waiting on us so that they can do the final draft approval. The developer is clearly eager for that to happen. It is an impediment to them actually building. And so that's why we tried to compress the time schedule as much as we can. Given the comments that we've gotten tonight, I think they're obviously good comments. I want to get them incorporated. We had proposed to just turn around this document for board consideration next week. I'm feeling like we're going to need to take just a little bit more time than that to make sure that we get them fully addressed. So I would propose that we do not go directly to the board next week, that we staff will take the time, get the comments put in, get them developed. I'd like to be able to have the opportunity to talk to Director Marks offline so that we make sure we get kind of the things. I think I've got most of the notes here. And we would go to the September, the first meeting in September would be what I would propose that we do. It was already going to be a tight timeline. This is quite a document to review. As you know, the board packet already went out next week.
Correct.
It was going to be a tight turnaround to do that. I would propose that to address these comments, we make sure we take the time to do that. This is a document that is a separate, you know, administrative action. I want to make sure that it has the best available information in it. And so that's the proposal, is that we would, with the committee's blessing, we would wait one more board meeting in September.
Yeah, it doesn't appear to me that any of the language, even in the resolution, is going to change. It's just the tightness of the backup report of information to make it as clear and as up to date as possible. I certainly appreciate you, Director Marks, digging into it as deep as you did. But so yes, I would support recommending exactly what Mr. Cole suggested.
Yeah, and I think so too. I mean, I know it's a tight schedule, but the comments and potentially whether or not to add that additional analysis to them. To the scope, you know, that will be up to staff. But then it'll give us a good document that can be used as a template for the next analysis. So that's also a really good learning curve here. Okay, no objection. Well, do you have any other comments regarding the report?
Well, I was going to say how much I appreciate staff's efforts to make this as comprehensive and as thorough as possible, but now Director Marks has even improved on that. So I think we're in a good place on this report. And,
okay.
Even the delay that might happen in approving the map should be still beneficial to make it as tight as possible.
Had a few comments. I believe Dr. Marks addressed some of them. Just going back to page 2, section 1.7, Mr. Vassopoulos, hold on. I'm going to get your name right. Vassopoulos. All the listed references are all recent version and past versions, and that have been thoroughly vetted. Is that right? Starting on page 123 of board packet, page 1-7, section 1.7.
Yes, I've tried to go back. I did realize that we left the word draft on a few things, but some of them are, I guess the part of the issue is that this document does reference and has a lot of areas that are directly out of the urban plan that we've adjusted. So kind of had to leave both, if there's two different versions of something, both in there, because technically they're both still referenced. One from whether it's looking at an area that came directly out of the urban plan or whether it's something that we revised. So we decided to leave, you know, as much of that, those things in there, and they all are available on our website. We've had them all posted. So
absolutely. Absolutely. No, I'm in total agreement of keeping the old versions too. It's just making sure that, you know, new versions have been added. So thank you for confirming that. And I'm going to leave on a lighter note. page 29 of the verification, figure 2-1. Is there any way we can just put that up? It's just interesting that as our population grows, we become more efficient. And page 29 of the board packet, page 2-3 of the verification.
This one here.
We can't see your screen.
Oh, you can't?
No.
Try stopping and then sharing again. There we go.
How's that?
There we go. That's it. That's the one. So love to see that. If any way we can also highlight this plot during the board meeting, that'd be great. And just a quick question, what happened in the year 2007, 2008? That we've stopped this need for more water. We became more efficient. Is it due to some policies or due to initiatives by the water agency?
Might be a question for Mr. Dickens might know, but I guess everybody else that was here, I was not here in 2007, so I'm not exactly sure.
Take credit for it.
Yeah. This is Matt Dickens here, Sustainability Manager. Typically, that little dip we see there is caused by the Great Recession 2008-2009, as well as some drought and other conservation efforts at that time, but mostly economic influences on demands.
Okay, understood. All right, thank you. Thank you, staff, for this verification.
Thank you for the feedback. I'm going to approve the document.
And we'll see you at the September board meeting.
Yep.
All right, let's move on to section item number 4.1, staff activities, presented by Mr. Ali Alassane.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, committee members. I have a couple of items I would like to share. First, I will start with water supply update, where we are today. For January through July, our water demands have been met by 15% from our groundwater sources and 85% from our imported supplies. The demand for this period of time, the cumulative demand up to end of July, is 29,000 acre feet. This is about 21% lower than 2022 deliveries in the same period. And again, I think this is a result of the cool, rainy weather, and still until end of June, we have the tier two water shortage regulations in place. So still there was rainy season, and then we have the regulations in place until end of June. So that's resulted in a 20% lower demand than what we see in 2022. And also remember, in 2022, we have January to April, where one of the most hottest, it was the hottest period of time that's recorded in record. So that was, there was a lot of water use at that time. But one of the other good news that in our banking program recharge deliveries, we have recharged up to 5,000 acre feet out of the 25,000 acre feet until the end of June in both semi-tropic and Rosedale. So we started already putting water into our banks. This number again is not finalized because there is a lot of factors going into these calculations from Kern County, from the bank, the two banking partnership. But this is the estimated as we are today. Hopefully by the end of this year, we will be able to put back into the banks, the two banks, the 25,000 acre feet that we planned for. As of today, this morning, we executed the exchange agreement with Rosedale for the 2023 exchange. It went through the legal review and then again for both from both entities, from both the agencies, and it's get approved today. And now we are in the process of pursuing it with the DWR and staff is working with them. We are still looking and trying to coordinate exploring some opportunities for additional exchange, because as we are sitting in more of these state water contractors meetings, we realize that there might be a possibility for spills in November, and that's what they are the earliest they're thinking that they might. So that's something that Sarah and myself and Steve are working in, looking into partnership with other agencies where we can see exchange, and also looking into properly water sales, because at the end of the day, we don't want to lose the water through spills from St. Louis. The second item I would like to give an update on is the continuation on the upper and lower Santa Clara River coordination. We had a meeting on July 24th with the partners in this group, and we continue to facilitate information sharing and collaboration on groundwater dependent ecological systems, invasive species management, restoration, and water management. And there is a couple of specific topics that we are starting working on. There is an effort to fly a LIDAR survey again that's sponsored by some of the entities in the lower basin, and that's what will cover the entire Santa Clara River. And we are trying to really piggyback on that and try to add get more information for us. So our staff already provided what we are looking for, what information we're looking for, and they're open for including, it's just adding additional cameras to the flight while they're flying. And so we're gonna get some good information as a result of them flying through the LIDAR, doing the LIDAR flying, hopefully in this end of this year. That information is gonna be used for our analysis for the habitat models that we have been developing, and also for the CEF analysis that we have been doing in the region. The other part of the work that's this collaboration is looking into specifically is develop work plan for the Arundo management using the state funding that became available recently. There is existing effort on the river right now by some entities, for example, City of Santa Clarita and other entities doing Arundo management. And so we received this funding and we are working with all of these partners to make sure that we could leverage our resources so that we're not repeating some of the work that they're doing and then complement each other so that we can get the best out of this effort. And I think this is a really good time for starting that. The collaboration started for some time now, but these are some of the real-time projects that we can implement some of these best management practices, give good ideas, and help each other on making sure that we are using the funding available for us in the best way that we can. My third item today is on July 24th, the agency hosted sites, benefits, and obligations contract regional meeting. We hosted the most of the agencies in the southern part of the state who are members of the sites reservoir committee. And so we hosted them here in our office where we have the site authority and site representatives came and gave a presentation. And it was a workshop mainly to discuss the proposed contract between the sites authority and the members agencies. There was a proposed contract that was sent to the different agencies that different agencies are looking into it. Till now, there is no requirement when they need it back, but they gave it to the different agencies on, we want you to spend time looking into these contracts and tell us if you have any comments and things like that. And they supplement that with these workshops around the state where they're visiting, and we were one of the host agencies for that. And also the meeting was a good opportunity for all the member agencies to ask the consultants who are doing the work for sites about the contracts and also voicing any concerns that we're having. Definitely there is still some work that needs to be done. There is a couple of milestones coming our way. The operation of the sites, the proposed operation plan is coming probably in September. So that's something we are waiting for because we want to use that in our models to see the benefit to our agency. But that was a really good chance also to network also with other agencies who are sharing the same interest on sites from this part of the state. My last point that I want to give an update on is attending the Aqua Region 8 meeting in West Basin Municipal Water District on July 13th. Staff attended with Director Cooper in that meeting, and we attended also the Director Cooper and Director Armitage, also both of them, they were there. So from staff, we have myself, Sarah, and Najwa attended that meeting. And it was a tour, the meeting also followed by a tour of the West Basin recycling facility. That was a good opportunity for all of us to listen to a panel of experts on the topic of water shortage on the state water project and how California must adapt to climate change. There was a really good discussion from some of the districts who have really suffered significantly during the drought time and how they manage their resources so that they can adapt to what happened to during those last 2 years of severe drought. And that also gave an opportunity for our staff to network with other members from the Region 8. And I think I was very happy that both Najwa and Sarah received a good welcome that day, and everyone now knows them now. So that's a good thing for them to be exposed to such activity. This concludes my report. I will stay for any questions.
Thank you, Mr. Al-San. Are there any questions from the public in attendance?
No, thank you.
Anyone virtual? Questions, comments from committee?
Well, regarding the sites reservoir draft contract, as far as the term of the contract, the length of the contract, what will be posted in the draft contract? And Mark, if you recall what was being posted there, and what renewable options might be.
Yeah, that's a great question, Dirk. I don't remember, that they had, you know, the way it was talked through is that you're kind of an owner, right?
Yeah.
And so I don't know that it had an end date. I'll go back and look at that. But it was more, you know, they talk a lot through, this is a little bit different than a lot of the other things because you are applying into a share as an owner of the project. And there's good things that come with that. And then there's, you know, other things that come with it as well. But I'll go back and look specifically at that question. Director Marks, I can't recall off the top of my head.
Yeah, I think that the overall concept of if you've got your block of water storage and you're going to manage that because you know best how to maximize benefit for your agency is a really great concept, and it goes along with this ownership mindset. But I'd certainly be disappointed if the bonds get paid off in 3 or 5 years.
Yeah, I don't think that would be. I don't remember that being the proposal. It was you're in.
So 100% allocation, anytime you want it.
Right. Well, there are operating constraints depending on your times, and they are just. I won't steal the fire. I think we're going to plan on doing a full update. You probably need to go to the full board and give a full update because sites is moving. It has a lot of momentum, and there are going to be some pretty critical decision points. Probably a year out, I'm guessing, from now, when we're going to be asked to really sign up. You know, we've been in, but it's going to get real here in probably about a year's worth of time.
What's the expected completion date?
They have it out in 2032. Yeah, so much of it is, dependent upon water rights application, completion of CEQA, right? There's a lot of steps that have to fall in line to do that. But that, I believe, is the projected.
Yeah, that's the projected.
From your earliest recollection, 15 years ago, what was the projected year from your memory?
When I attended early meetings about the idea of sites, and they were thinking 2025. So it's now, I think it's 7 years is good, not bad. And one of the things just want to share with the committee that our legal is looking into the contracts now. So that's what we are waiting for, truly. They're looking into that and reviewing it. And as Steve mentioned, as soon as we feel that we have all the information that we want to share with the board, one of the things I mentioned that they're coming up with the operation plan, which is one of the things that we really wanted to run in our reliability model to see how this will fit into our model. And they have been reviewing the operation plan for some time now. The last date we know that they're going to release it is September. And so if we get it in September, we'll be able to plug it into our gold SIM model as example and see how this, adding this asset to our portfolio, how it will improve our reliability. And so that's, I think we might be coming into the board in a couple of times, showing the contract first maybe, and then showing the impact on our portfolio.
Yeah, that would be nice. Was it Martin? Any comments?
Thank you, Rob. Chair Ozaski. Ellie, thank you for your report. It's strange that 20% reduction in demand might cause a problem for our agency, but did it cause any trouble with what to do with all the water we do have? I mean, it's just add that to the
And that's part of what we are struggling with, is that the demand is going down at the same time that we have plenty of water for this year. And so
I'm sure Matt Dickens was happy.
Matt Dickens will be happy. But I think we are trying to find, most of the agencies, the state water contractors, are struggling with the same struggle that we're struggling with. They're trying to find location for plenty of water that's available for them. And so there is this competition now in finding places where you can put the water. In addition to that, the Kern River is still flowing. And so that's putting additional stress on our banking partners who are trying to take as much, because they are obligated to take as much from the Kern River. So it's a good problem to have. We're trying to figure our way through it, and I can assure you that Sarah is doing all her best to find out places where we can use this water or put it into use in with exchange, through exchange, or our last option is going to be sales.
Very good. Excuse me, Mr. Martin, you mentioned sales. So selling of water, are you referring to using rail and hauling it to sites, or how does that look like, selling water?
It's going to be some of the partners who have ownership on the State Water Project who want more water.
Yeah.
As example, a good example of that is West Side. West Side, they always look for water supplies, and they are contractor of the State Water Project. So everything is going to be wheeled through the State Water Project system, where they can take it from their turnouts that they have already, they have been using for a State Water Project. Or sometimes through exchange, where we exchange it at some point. St. Louis, as example, we give them some part from St. Louis and they will take it somewhere from somewhere else. It's always done through either wheeling through the State Water Project system or through exchange systems.
Okay, understood. Sorry, back to you, President Martin.
No, just one other comment. Thank you to your staff and our staff for supporting the Region 8 program. I know it's much appreciated. So thank you for that.
A quick question on the Arundel removal. So I'm glad that we're going to work with the city so we don't duplicate efforts. Does that mean that since the city is already involved in the process, we can just extend hiring of their vendors that they've already hired and just increase the number of sites where we have that problem? What's the vision here?
That's a good capture of the vision. I think we're working with the group, as Ali talked about it, to scope out a work plan. I kind of think of like three different components. One is like boots on the ground stuff. I want to make sure we do a good portion of that funding up for boots on the ground and getting Arundel removed. So to do that best is partnerships with people that are already doing it there. They have boots on the ground, so it's expanding that just as you're articulating. The second component is leveraging these pilot programs to technically study what it does. And I want to make sure that we technically prove up some of the water resource benefits of removing Arundel. So there's some technical work that can go along with that. That will support future grant funding efforts. You know, $1 million sounds like a lot of money. It doesn't go very far when you're talking about Arundel removal. So doing the technical work to prove up our ability, both from a water resources standpoint and from a habitat improvement standpoint. So I want to make sure we have the technical documents that look at these pilots and put it down in a scientific way so that we can leverage that work going forward. And then the third component is there's an effort going on right now to try and do a programmatic permit for the entire watershed. I want to infuse that process because that will streamline the ability to go in and do these projects for the future. So those are kind of the three prongs, but we're going to put some meat on that working with the group and let's see what we come up with.
Excellent. Thank you. Thank you for the update. Let's move on to item 5.1, status of agency solar panel, presented by Mr. Matt Dickens. Mr. Dickens, go ahead.
Thank you, Chair Ozerhofsky and members of the committee. Let me make sure my screen is sharing here. Turn on my video.
Looks good.
Okay, you can see my screen okay?
Yes, we can.
I hope you guys get an opportunity to look outside tonight because the sky is gorgeous, which is a great place to start in conversation talking about the status of SCD Water solar assets. I think this is an amazing story of, I don't know if you've seen the movie, The Perfect Storm, but of course, the outcome in that movie was tragic. Conversely, though, while there's similar tales of struggle, what we have here is a great outcome at the end of our story. So let's get through this. Right. So just a little bit about my background, just in case, for the committee's benefit. I have 25 years of experience in water and energy conservation, now coming on 26 years. It's, you blink and time passes. Spent some time working on energy conservation projects in New Mexico, specifically the Green Grid Project, which was a partnership between Los Alamos County, Los Alamos National Laboratory, Sandia National Laboratory, the state of New Mexico, and the Japanese federal government through the Ministry of Trade and Industry, where we brought significant solar and other types of investments to the county for testing and also incorporation into our production mix. So have some experience in working in solar, also worked on smaller grant projects for schools in the region before coming out here in 2010. Where I focus mostly, of course, on water at Valencia Water Company, and then, of course, with water and sustainability here at SCV Water since its merge. So this is coming from a little bit of perspective of that experience. Tonight's presentation, we're going to look at kind of the history of the solar asset development. We'll look at a review of the purchase option process, because I think it's important to note how we started this investment, and then what happened in the market, what kind of transformation occurred beyond the agency's control, and then how the agency responded to try to optimize the benefit of these assets for our customers and ratepayers. We'll look at the discussion of ownership transition, also a summary of our operational maintenance and preventative maintenance framework. That's OMPM. We'll try to use that acronym going forward, operational maintenance and preventative maintenance. There's also another type of maintenance, corrective maintenance, which is a little different, but we are working on that as well. And then you've got overview of current PD system performance, and then I'll kind of conclude with some next steps. So in essence, this is an information sharing presentation for your benefit. So again, in the project overview, the agency has two major assets that are located up at Rio Vista Water Treatment Plant. We have what's called phase one or phase two. It's also called Castaic one or Castaic two. And then also phase one is the lower field, while phase two is the upper field. So you might hear me interchangeably use those terms. But in this case, you can see the older field is about 9.51 megawatt hours. It was built in 2011 under a PPA agreement. And then phase two is a 3.5 megawatt system that was built in 2013, also under a PPA agreement. And then there's a small 30 kilowatt system over at our Pine Street location. It's important to note that these systems, if you want to know what is 4.5 megawatts, your typical house system is 4.5 kilowatts. So this is enough solar for about 1,000 households of electricity. So it's a pretty sizable utility scale photovoltaic system. So we purchased them again in 2011 and 2013. You can see here that this chart just kind of shows us the solar PV price declines and deployment growth. You know, prices were pretty high. As a matter of fact, when I started working in projects in Los Alamos, we were looking at $10 a watt. Per watt installed. So, you know, those systems, like a 4.5 megawatt system, was prices at time at $45 million. So a lot of agencies looked at an alternative to get solar on site to have more reliable price structures, but also to have the benefit of the solar energy. And so you can see here, 2011, 2013, when we purchased these systems. Same thing here. There were basically two major formats for the way that these projects were developed. You had a third party owned. That's kind of a PPA agreement, meaning that we don't own the asset. We agree to a certain fixed amount of cost per kilowatt hour. There's no out of pocket expenses to have it constructed. We provided the land. They connected it, they designed it, they built it, and then they charged us a guaranteed rate of electricity with a guaranteed escalation rate over the useful life of the asset. that has since changed more and more. Customer-owned projects are kind of, increasing as third-party-owned projects are decreasing. This is through 2022. So you can see when we built our systems, primarily people were using third-party-owned formats for developing solar because of the low cost. And when they were tiered rates in the rate structure, you might be able to use that solar and get yourself into a lower tier. So your purchase power agreement is a much better deal than what the solar or what the electric company was charging for its electric rates. However, something happened with all the proliferation of solar plants. And this is kind of a fun thing. It's called the ISO duck curve. What it really is showing here, it kind of looks like ducks. You can kind of see throughout the year, the net load of megawatts in solar. And what it's doing is it's kind of showing the base, which is this black line, kind of has these bell curves, you know, of daytime usage, right? So people are, using a lot of purchased electricity when there's no solar. Solar's coming on board, they're using solar. And so what it does is it shifts the peak pricing times from what used to be the middle of the day to kind of here at the beginning of the night when people are still at work or maybe transitioning home and kind of increasing their loads and the solar production is coming down. So this ISO duck curve, what it did is it influenced the Public Utilities Commission, but more so the utility providers, to make a case that the current rate structure and tariff designs that it had in place were no longer relevant or based on the use consumption demands on the ground. And they won that argument. So the rate considerations and impacts, phase one was interconnected under the NEM program. That was the net metering program. And phase two came in at the RES BCT, which is a little bit of a different type of tariff. So the California Public Utilities Commission, based off of this change in time of use and the shifting of peak demands, they basically also allowed for the shifting of their rate structures to this time of use shift strands, which have had benefits and impacts on the short and long-term value of the PPA. So now our PPA at certain times was what used to be lower than electric rates and was more reliable in terms of its cost structure was now more expensive than what we could be getting from the electric company at certain times of the day. So with that, though, there was a settlement and the SCV Water was awarded a difference payment of $1.8 million. But that didn't change the tariff. So we got paid out a little bit of the loss of the benefit of having the solar due to the changing of the rules mid-game. But we still were stuck with that new kind of tariff structure and paradigm for our solar asset. So that led us in 2020 to start a process to look at our PPA agreements. We had an option to purchase the systems at year eight, I believe. And so we did a cost benefit analysis and pro forma analysis with a consultant, Terra Verde Energy. And what we found was pretty interesting. You know, under the PPA, if we continued to have the PPA in place, the net PPA costs over the life of the asset is kind of this orange line here. Kind of comes out to about $30.1 million after the benefits and credits. It comes out to about $19.1 million. We found that if we bought the system, we purchased at $15.467 million, gets us down to 7 cents per kilowatt hour. The projected cost over life of the asset is $25.8 million, and after we get our credits and other benefits, it comes out to about $14.2 million. So, if we purchase the system, we can see that we were going to save $4.9 million over the benefit of the asset, which is about 26% relative to maintaining the PPA. And so now January 2021, we received approval and authorization by the board of directors to purchase the system, and ownership occurred, I think, in March of 2021 at the purchase price of $15.467 million. So in March 2021 as well, we developed a a operations and maintenance and preventative maintenance OMPM agreement with SunPower, who was the provider for Goldman Sachs Renewable, which was the owner of the system. And so we had a T&M agreement to basically say, provide us the same level of service that you're providing your current customer under a time and materials basis. And this will allow us time to develop a more long-term RFP for how an agency would, a public agency would maintain the system. So we received that agreement. And then in March, also right around the time, I think the weekend we purchased the system, we had received notification, which you can see here to the right. This one of our fields had the tracker had not closed during a very, very high wind event. And it kind of created this, the winds pushing against that system. And as you can see, that back row came off of its steel mounts there. And it was probably flopping around in the wind during the night. And we were able to agree with the Goldman Sachs folks to split the cost of the insurance cost for the repair of that back row. And also its entire tracker was damaged. So there were needing to replace the panels, as well as the tracking system and the tracking equipment for that row. And then shortly following this, it took a while to get the repairs together, to work out the agreements and the scheduling and the logistics with SunPower and their service provider, which their subcontractor, which is NovaSource. In July of 2021, we got hit with a thermal event outage that took our system right in the middle of COVID, right in the peak of the summer, peak production time. It basically sent us to a full outage on the system. And it took 100 days for us to get the replacement parts to get that system back online. If you recall, there were supply chain shortages and just equipment failures and shortages across the supply chain. So very hard to get those into place. Finally, November, the repairs were conducted in the last row. However, we did get a new fuse put in and the system was restored, but it was only restored for about 6 days before the fuse blew again. And it took us till about February, March before we could get it, to January, to get the system partially restored to about 20 to 40% of capacity. I'll explain what that means here shortly in more detail. In March 2022, in addition to having the system outage, SunPower changed their monitoring systems. And so our system was no longer compatible with that system. And so we went blind and we went into the dark, if you will, with being able to monitor the system unless we did it manually. In April 2022, because we were having a lot of difficulty working with SunPower, they're an international firm. They lost a lot of their local support personnel. And so we were starting to deal with international contacts, which was very difficult to kind of whittle and navigate through the maze to get on-site service in our system when they are, again, maintaining gigawatts of electric systems in the region. So we were kind of, when we were in the pathway of service, we had folks on site. Other times it was very, very challenging and difficult to get somebody on the line. So we decided to go directly with NovaSource, who were the boots on the ground, and have an agreement with them in April 2022. And realizing that we were still having struggle getting timely response to our system, recognizing the value and the importance of it, I fast-tracked the request for proposal process, which meant I had to research numerous public agency RFPs to develop one specific to our agency, in which case there weren't many. So I worked closely with DOE, the National Renewable Energy Laboratories, and other public agencies to build a very robust, comprehensive OMPM service support contract on the RFP. And in August 2022, that was awarded. Again, there's your kind of the perfect storm. So the OMPM contract scope, it covers the both systems, the 4.5 megawatts over at the Rio Vista Water Treatment Plant and 30 kilowatts at the Pine Street. They provide us with energy and power provider performance optimization, meaning that they will look at our total production, validate that production, verify that production, and then make sure that we are applying any of those credits. That means energy that we're putting back onto the grid. We apply those credits to the right accounts in our service area, so that reduces those their costs as well. Then we'll have detailed quarterly energy performance analysis. You know, they have to look at weather. They need to look at, capacity with these performance reports and kind of let us know, hey, yeah, the system is working 90%, 60%. There's problems. Let's fix those. Or here's what's occurring, and the production based kind of on the real-time weather. Annual analysis of financial reporting, annual preventative maintenance services, a whole slew of, tasks that they need to do on an annual basis to make sure that we don't have those types of outages. Perhaps those could have been prevented. It's very likely that they were caused by rodent action in the area. I have personally seen some exploded mice up there, and also rattlesnakes and other critters. So it also includes annual panel washing, weed mitigation, which is a passive cost item. Our current annual OMPM contract cost is about $120,000 per year. We do have corrective maintenance that we've been working with the group to repair. That's been about $50,000. And our new monitoring system is about $80,000. Okay, so here's the diagram of our system to kind of give you an idea of what it looks like when we talk about the lower, the lower field, the upper field. There are essentially 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 inverters. Inverter A and B are down here. So you've got your panels, your inverters, there's tracking systems. These are kind of larger inverters, and this is how they're blocked out. So we can very, highly with good definition and good clarity kind of pinpoint any problems. And then it gives a good diagram also of our Pine Street location. So we have a collaborative management team because there are various different components. There's the system itself, the electric components. There's also the sustainability benefits, the power that's being used, the renewable energy certificates. There's land considerations and pest and control and mitigation. So we have folks from sustainability, me as the project manager. We have team members from operations, members from administration, buildings and grounds, and finance, so that we can share information, show impacts, and be on the same page. And those objectives of that group is to information share, coordinate maintenance support, assess impacts in terms of operations, financial sustainability, and of course to enhance redundancy and optimize the value of this asset to the agency. So let's look at some current photovoltaic system performance. In August 2022, we awarded the contract. And then through August 2022 through June 2023, we were working on what we call system triage. That's where we improve that system from 20 to 40% to 60 to 80% capacity through manual verification. This picture to the right kind of shows what manual verification looks like. You might see run and 380. Well, that's 380 out of 400, which tells us, that system is running at near full capacity at that time of day. And it's going to shift throughout the day based off of the angle of the sun and so on and so forth. In July 2023, we have the new monitoring system online fully. We have access to it. We have 100% capacity, meaning we're producing at all of our systems, minus a couple of tracking issues. We are having some inverter communication issues, but we've confirmed that they are producing energy and putting that energy onto the grid. So still some work to iron out the bugs, but certainly have come a long way from where we were in July 2021. Here's kind of showing you what we're looking at here. This is data I pulled off this morning from our monitoring portal. Metered production July 1 through July 31st, about 972,000 kilowatts or 900 kilowatt hours or 97.2 megawatt hours. You'll notice that there's a dark part of the blue bar and there's a light blue. The dark is the lower system and the light is the upper field or the cystaic two. What we were receiving information in our production meter, but it stopped on July 13th, as you can see here. But even though it stopped recording on the monitor, that picture I just showed you was taken later in the month that had full production. So we were able to get kind of see in real time when offline. We got out there and checked the system. It's producing, it's just not recording. So there are more kilowatt hours that are going on the system than what's showing here. But 972,000 is that's a lot of juice. And then here in October, we're still working on our configuration of those communication, and we do have some minor tracking issues. We have some erosion control issues down at the lower field, and we have rodent mitigation issues that we're still coordinating with, but things are moving forward. And we've so far, we're producing so far through the month about 225,000 kilowatt hours or 25,000 kilowatt hours per day. So this is very good news. This is a lot of production. So what is our next steps? Well, for our next steps for the PV system, like I mentioned, we have our lower field production meter communication. Those inverters producing but not reporting. We have lower field panel washing. We washed the upper field panels, but we couldn't do the lower field because of the erosion considerations and concerns. The vendor didn't want to, be leaning on or putting pressure on those panels when there is some significant erosion, specifically from last year's rain, which was a lot higher than normal and kind of exacerbated that issue. We have upper field tracker repairs and invert. And one thing to keep on mind is inverter replacements are on the radar. These inverters are reaching their useful life. We did budget for those replacement, and again, the replacement of those appurtenances were incorporated in our financial analysis. So it's not as though it's a total loss there. It's just being prepared for it. And then on Pine Street, we have scheduled the panel washing. For land management, our Roland Valiente with Billings Grounds is working on erosion control to lower field, which I think has been scheduled. And then also we're working at the on rodent control mitigation for both fields. The last thing I do want to talk about here is another kind of economic opportunity. I know next week you've seen the agenda. We'll be discussing other energy efficiency items that will benefit and work with this system. One thing we should consider, and I believe that would make financial sense for the agency, is to monetize the renewable energy certificates that we're going to be producing. Our new monitoring system meets the gold standard for verifying those renewable energy certificates, which we can sell right now are running about $15 per megawatt hour. That could be up to about $150,000 per year in additional revenues that this system could generate. And then with that, battery storage implementation and configuration if it's approved by the board of directors. There's a story with all the facts, and I'd be, again, happy to answer any questions. I'm very excited to see the system working at the level that it is and being so close to having it, almost recommissioned or retro-commissioned back to the status that it was when it started on the day that it came into operation. But we're getting there, moving very closely, and be happy to answer any questions the committee might have.
Thank you, Mr. Jenkins. Any questions from public attendance?
No, thank you.
Any questions? From any members? Questions, comments? President Martin.
Thank you for your report, Matt. I'm curious if we've done a recent evaluation of the economics of the, when we decided to purchase the system back and get out of that PPA that we were in, the economics that were, if the decision was based on, are we tracking that pretty well?
I think with the outage, President Martin, thank you for the question. I think with the outage, that was certainly unintended and unforeseen in the financial analysis. However, we are working with our consultant to conduct that analysis and try to recapture as much of the perspective that we can so that we can better understand the impacts financially of the outage, and then looking forward, optimizing performance of the system from here through the end of its useful life.
Well, it would be good to get an update on that at some point to see if, how far off of our plan we are, if we are in fact off.
Very well.
Mr. Dickens, can you pull up the slide where you break down the contribution of each department within SCV Water? You got admin, operations, you know, your department.
The collaboration management team?
Yes, yes. That's...
Oh. Sorry, hang on a second.
No worries. Oh.
Stop share.
I mean, this is fine. You know, you don't have to go full screen.
Yeah, I seem to have lost, like... I pressed the wrong button.
Don't press it.
Yeah, don't press that button, whatever one I did. Let's see here. Let's try this again. What's this one? Slideshow. That's, yeah, it's crashing here. But please continue with your question while I work on this.
So my concern is obviously you're the SM. That's very clear. And thank you for presenting this to us. Looking forward to the ROI that as President Martin suggested, and you know, further developments. But my concern is, you know, operations, maintenance, preventative, and proactive. That seems more of within the scope of operations, Mr. Abercrombie's kind of field. Do you have enough time to lead this project and continue with serving as the POC, as the head POC of this solidarity plan?
Well, when my computer's working, I would say the answer generally is yes. But I think a very important point is being made here, Director Ozdrowski, and that is that from an operational perspective, the system is in their, it's in their region. It's at their office, and they have immediate access to it. So, oh, here we go. I'm getting back to my things are working again here. I think. Can you hear me? Okay.
Yes, and we can see your presentation.
All right. So I thought about putting together a kind of a Venn diagram showing the various different components. The collaborative management team is, I think it's a good structure for managing the system. There may need to be more of a role from operations in terms of operating, repairing the system. But I do see that there are, from a sustainability perspective, incorporating the utility, the benefit, the renewable energy certificate strategies, I see sustainability as having a vested interest, a compelling interest to remain in the decision-making paradigm of the operation of the system. So just like buildings and grounds is looking specifically at the erosion, the land, weed mitigation, you know, of the land of the area, operations can manage the actual equipment in line with its operations, the sustainability, financial folks looking to make sure it's operating financially sound, and sustainability working to optimize the benefit for the agency from a monetizing perspective as well as from a sustainability perspective. I hope that answers that clearly.
It does. I'm just concerned that it doesn't pull you away from other opportunities, sustainability-related opportunities, and that you're not the sole POC for final say in terms of what goes on this project. Just a concern, not a suggestion, not a recommendation. And then my other question or suggestion, pending agreement from this committee, is for pest management, pest control, could we hire if we're not doing this ourselves, could we hire a vendor in that is within our within the city limits? You know, not pull out bids from outside of the city. Meaning we employ, you know, local vendors for that particular pest management. Is that a possibility?
Certainly, I'll see who Building Grounds is working with, Chair Ozarowski. I think at this point we're just getting from the consultant, from the actual system ONMPM consultant, we're mapping out all of the critical need areas that need to be mitigated. And so then that would work with Buildings and Grounds and the pest mitigation firm that they're working with. But I can make the suggestion, if that firm is not local, that we look to see if there's local options.
Any objections from committee members?
No.
Okay, that's all for me. Directors, any questions and comments? Thank you for the presentation, Mr. Higgins. All right, let's move on to item 6, committee plan calendar as presented by Mr. Ali Al-Samf.
No change. Probably will come in September with the, as we were supposed to come in August with the presentation about the model using of gold sim in analyzing the AVAC and other options. And so probably will come in September with that. That's one of the things I just want to make a highlight for that, but the rest of the calendar stays the same.
Okay. Any questions from public in attendance?
No.
Quick question here. So September 13 looks really busy. Do you believe we'll be able to make it on all the items?
We'll probably be adjusting a couple of them, Chair Ozarowski.
And then regarding Devil's Den potential revenue analysis, have we reached out to any chambers of commerce, specifically in Silicon Valley, to identify any companies that could be that would be interested in that particular area because of that environment and because access to a non-potable water that could be used for cooling purposes? If not, could be, and I can assist with that, maybe.
Definitely, I'd be interested in hearing your thoughts on what you're thinking of. What we're currently working on is engaging a consultant to help us understand fatal flaw analysis on the power grid. Or basically,
okay,
can you put something there and get the electricity somewhere? It's understanding that. It's that question that the solar providers that we've worked with in the past have just really never been able to run to ground on it. And so being that was one of the key revenue generating items for the property, we thought we would engage a team that has the ability to run through that analysis for us. So we'll understand if there's limitations on the power grid that are going to limit what you're going to put on the property.
I did not know that. I had no idea that there's limits on.
We don't know.
Okay.
So we're trying to answer that question. So that's the exact question we're trying to track down. So the partnerships that we've tried to form in the past, they just never got to that point where the analysis was complete.
Okay.
So we're trying to put ourselves in a position. If we know the answer to that question, then we can market the property.
Absolutely. Questions, comments from directors?
Yeah.
President Markey?
On the Santa Canyon Village SP 221, is that coming back first meeting of September or second? I guess we don't know yet.
Yeah, I'd like to get it on the first.
So it doesn't necessarily have to come back to the committee.
I was not planning on bringing it back to the committee.
Okay.
Unless you wanted to see it.
No. Consensus among the directors here?
Yeah.
All right. No further questions and comments, we move to item 7, adjournment. Thank you, staff. Thank you, directors. Meeting is adjourned.
Thank you.
Thank you, everybody.